the monster, she's a happy old, always very important. The blue blood, the viny
blood.
Okay. I talked to the other week before. A bit of a love poem for Valentine's Day. And the poem is a sort of a metaphor for emigration in the 50s and 60s. And I grew up near a railway station where they had shunting wagons and cattle pens, and it was sort of our playground when we were children, and there was a stye there, which thankfully is still there. So, this sort of, okay, I'll start. It's called First Love. It's not as racy as Jerry's, but you can read between the lines of it. We did our courting on the grey slate sky, our first kiss and cuddle, fumbling, awkward in the pitch dark night. Where is the moon? I don't remember a moon. The train puffed in the distance, cow mooed in the pens, hot door half open, sparks from the watchman's fire, a red glow swaying left and right, clickety clack, clickety clack, clickety clack. You drift in and out of my dreams. My childhood memories are filled with you. On a cold winter's night, you tapped my shoulder as I walked up the hill. You were home for a funeral. I'm in the American Air Force, you told me. We sat on the sty. You held my hand. I write. You promised.
Mary, I know you didn't want to go first, but you did a fine job. Now we have Jack Eby.
Don't be shy, no, Jack.
Can I read two poems?
You can. Three.
Gotcha. Okay, so these are just poems that I wrote over 15 years ago, I think. And I work mainly as an actor, and oddly, instead of writing poems, they seemed all to be about the voice of Peter Truman. First one is called Lady in Waiting. In an antechamber, I became a lady in waiting for a pristine encounter. Groans poked through the closed door. I waited once before when groans that have now grown old broke to screams and died away to sleep, the baton passed to another generation. And before that again, the boyar within me fed in clandestine alliance with the night on groans of the spoken assumption of pleasure, skirmishing with semi-screams that finally died at the height and sent me silent to an empty bed, party to my prowling crime, party to my maidenhead. Some years on, I stand now, yearning on, an icon in a shrine, galvanized by a subtlety of breath in conference of hush. Charged and undermined by discarded gowns that have become groans in the other room, they ask me, where are mine? Where are mine? Absent from my mouth, it would seem, no rightful element in this shrine. Sometimes, to my surprise, I hear a slight cough and engage in mild delight. I find myself still many miles from the state of having froth in my face from mouth noise. soon perhaps another will come through the door, her groaning dumb, pragmatism at last having reigned, clad perhaps without much satisfaction, but clad nonetheless, sufficient to the task of hunting down more sound, turning tension to tone. I am not in her sight, I slide along behind as I am bound, propped upon a gliding dome of silk, handle to a little handbell, counterpoint to her right of rage. Sometimes I get a chance to be shrill, sucking spite out of silent time. Sometimes I snipe and snarl. She will take her stance, and I will be there when the battle has been lost or won, to hold her sweaty hand. But I long sometimes to hear my own grunt leave my throat and fill my groin. I long to shake off the shackles of this antic shell, to feel my hands upon a surface of flesh about its neck, and wreak havoc upon this prissy hell. And the second one is called Home of Another. I lingered once for a time in the home of another. Liquid full lungs laid claim to my song, but when the hum subsided, my sound came strong. But I remember the hum, calmly stringing out time, like a greedy bird commandeering space, making a case for the sublime. Now I am somewhere between that place and the final chime, prime as ever in my quest for grace, strong in my need for some fine tone to leave the bell of face.
Next up we have Niall Herriot. Got a couple of poems here. Came from when I was on a short stay in the northeast part of our island. And one is a kind of a war poem, and the other is a kind of a peace and love poem. First one is, A Walk on the Wild West Side. Sandy Row. Four tattooed skinheads, thick as neck and eyes as red, with the bloody hand symbols that glare from Sandy Row gables. Step off the pavement or die. Don't look them in the eye. When does the ethnic cleansing start? The serious stuff we mean. Shankill butchers, that was a picnic. We want to wipe West Belfast clean. Andersonstown. Two long-haired youths, each a Bobby Sands look-alike. Might they be carrying a bomb on that speeding motorbike? The peace line. The Berlin Wall came tumbling down. Here's our version. Belfast peace line. A chopper hovers overhead. Metallic clatter and breathy whine. Fort Apache. An armored car looms from the gates of Fort Apache Springfield Road. Two young faces stare from the top. Suddenly my heart's right in my throat. Long, slim arrows have targeted me. Very slowly, I take my hands from my coat. Isn't it great we don't have all that bullshit anymore? The second one is a kind of a love song, a love poem for those women in Northern Ireland who seem to have been forgotten, really, the peace women. Ode to Woman. It's a bit, it's sympathetic, but it's also a bit sardonic. Ode to Woman. In the wee black north. Woman, how about ye? Soft, interesting, different. A wee bit annoying at times. But where would we be without ye? Twould be a queer world indeed. What yous are here to stay, there's no doubt about ye. Woman, that's the goal. Or persuade them to woo ye. It's what ye have in store for men. But it seems it's not your only role. Who says these days you can't have it all, the wee house, the wains, job as well? And let men think they're in control. Old man, you think you're boss. Poor fool, you're just a tool. A hunter-killer brain is what you have. It's the other half that bears the cross of putting up with all your bull. For all your schemes and wars, we men just don't give a toss.
Madeline Darcy's next up, so get comfortable because I think she's got a little story for us.
Hey. Thanks very much. thank you. I think this is a very romantic story. But it's set in the future. It's called It Could Be Dodgy Out There. As I click my health snack into the food zapper, I remember what happened an hour ago and the look on Rufina's face when she said, "I'm sorry, Iggy, I don't want to shag mate with you anymore." I was surprised. I thought it was shaping up to be a regular Friday night. I planned a few decent mood enhancers and a session in Rumble's virtual raid, but all I got from Rufina was a kickback. "I like you, but it's not enough," she added, looking straight at me out of the screen. So close, I felt as if I could touch her. I almost said, "It's enough for me, I'm not fussed." But I didn't. Even tech lit professors have their pride. "Actually, I bonus like you," she said then. "But you don't want to explore the other outer world. And I need more from life. I want someone who'll go outside with me. Some people do that, you know." "I see. What could I say? I never go out. I've seen Wiki life. I know it's dodgy out there." I was upset though. I could find nothing else to say, so I just said "skimple" and switched her off. It's not as if I love Rufina anyway. Even liking someone long term is a bit jaded. And talk of love is so 20th century, as people often say. It's not expected these days that any couple will shag mate for longer than 6 months. Most people just go straight to their super thinkpads and find a replacement within minutes. Rufina told me in one of our better moments that until she met me, the longest time she'd ever sexed with anyone was 2 months. The food zapper dings and I eject my health snack. The label says Alpha Male Protein Pack and it's on my approved intake list, but frankly it just doesn't appeal. I take it out and throw it in the compactor. I find another package called Full Traditional Breakfast United Kingdom in brackets. "Skimple," I say out loud. I'm glad I keep a few junk packets around for times like these. As I wait for the food zapper to ding again, I think about Rufina. I know sexing is generally short-lived, but after 20 years or so of mature shag-mating, I still can't get used to the speed of it. I like Rufina so much, I actually left my crash pad last week to meet her in real life. To disrobe and rehab myself in preparation for the life outside my crash pad is always a palaver. I hardly ever wear anything at home except my relaxers, but I made a big effort for the live date with Rufina, not a Velcro in sight. Just the quick heli ride to the hostelry where I met Rufina was scary enough, but the view from the outer world, from the Lux pad she rented for the night, made me nervous. The touchy-feely was amazing, but I don't think I've yet recovered from the trip. Oh, I feel emotions now. Stop. I'll have to put Rufina out of my head. Thing, the full traditional breakfast of the United Kingdom is ready, and I am glad of the distraction. While I eat, I wonder why all I managed to say to Rufina was simple. Surely I could have thought of something better. After all, I am a ticklish professor. I like the word skimple, though. I researched its origins for my first knowledge exam. From 1960 to 2000, people used the word cool frequently, and it had many different meanings, one of which was okay. However, on the first primitive mobile communication devices, the word cool often smart texted into the word book. Therefore, anything that was previously described as cool began to be referred to as book. As all tech-lit students know, the word book later became obsolete as a noun describing reading matter, and the actual physical book was replaced at first by something called a skimple. The skimple didn't last long, but it was greatly admired at the time, and young people used the word to signify agreement and approval, and well, that's why we still say skimple today. The history of tech-lit is full of such wonders. Yes, I know, I'm a dweeb. For sure. A lot of people find tech-lit drear, and certainly some areas of the study are uninspiring, but I love all that ancient hist. I decided to work so I can get Rufina out of my mind. My work always unfrazzles me. Yesterday, my mother sent me an antique computer by speed delivery. You might be interested, she said when she Skyped me. It belonged to your great-grandfather. Apparently he typed words into it when he was young. That in itself is grossly interesting. My own great-grandfather must have been a primitive 21st century blogger. They didn't even have voice recognition software back then. Yesterday, when I finally managed to decode the old files from way back and download them onto my super ThinkPad, I felt triumphant. Immediately, I missived the head of the tech-lit department to tell her I might have some interesting material for my monthly seminar on 21st century blogspots. She's not hugely keen on the historical aspects of tech-lit, so I always have to let new ideas for my courses slump in her head for a while before I push them any further in. I had to desert my new project then while I gave a lecture to my students by multi-Skype. Yesterday was a heavy teach day. Afterwards, I was wasted. Now, though, I have time to read what I decoded and assess my ancestors' blog. It may well be one of the earliest blogs I've had the opportunity to assess. As I always say in my lectures, the primitive 21st century blogger can be divided into three categories. One, the blogger who wanted to be popular. Two, the blogger who wanted to sell something. This includes the blogger, her stroke himself. And three, the delusional blogger, i.e. one of our ancestors who actually believed that sane people would want to know about the mundane aspects of her, his life, which were usually profoundly boring, even for a professor like myself who studies the 21st century with Asperger's EL. I can't wait to find out which of these my ancestor was, so I turn my screen to word mode and begin to read. The diary, as my great-grandfather calls it, recounts the story of the year in his life. It is 2020. He is 21 years old, and he is living in a place called London. I think this must be in what we now know as Greater Europe. He meets a girl, and he writes about this girl every day. Then she has to return to her home, which is in a place called Italy. I think this must be somewhere in Lesser Europe. Because he misses her so much, he travels to this Italy in search of her. He finds her in a place where there are olive groves and they eat olives and drink wine in something called a courtyard, which appears to be a garden of some kind. In this place, she cooks some fish in something called a barbecue, and just before they sit down to eat, she asks him to pick a lemon from the lemon tree nearby. He plucks this lemon from the tree and writes, "The leaf still attached to the lemon was so green. against the yellow zesty skin, and so green against the blue Mediterranean sky, and so green against the colour of my true love's red robe, that I, so green a young man, in this one instant found Satori, I would never, I knew, forget the scent of that lemon. As I read, I am filled with emotions called longings. This is in no way like a blog. My ancestor describes this part of his life in slow and sweet words, and it is clear that his words are meant only to remind himself of what he cares about. I wish I could experience this sweetness. And hell's universe, how did my ancestor cope with being outside his room for so long? There's something else there too. Something about my ancestor, something he had, something I want. I pace my crash pad in a frenzy, then I rush back to my super think pad and press the truth button. The reduction info remains, as always, a mix of truth and lies. But I am not a technical professor for nothing. And so I diss, and I diss, and I diss, until finally I find out to my joy what I need to know. Then, though I am almost too afraid to do it, I Skype Rufina. She looks as if she has been crying. I touch her beautiful face on the screen. I want to wipe away her tears. I put my finger to my mouth and touch it with my tongue. It tastes salty. And though I know this is probably the residue from my full traditional breakfast, United Kingdom, it seems to me that I taste her tears. Rufina, I say in a rush, I want to go to the outer world with you. There's a place called Italy. I've checked. It's still there. I want to pick a real lemon from a real lemon tree for you. I want you to be my shag mate for a very long time. I know I'm a dweeb, and I've no experience of the outer world, but... She says nothing for a minute. What do you think? I ask fearfully. I know it could be dodgy out there, but this is what I would like to do. She smiles then.
Simple, she says. Simple indeed. And next up, we have Rosalind Bloom.
Good evening. I'm going to make it short with four poems. Attempt. Here we lie, sweat soaking, wet and gasping, side by side. Like after a fight, like after the hunt for an unfound center. That was number one. They're all love poems. This one here is written for a woman. Moments. Where I'm seeking is the tender moment joining us. Where the wise soft word, the vibe. When eyes dive, beholding the other. Hands breeze upon the skin. Hair envelops gently what becomes dear to us. Then, moments are gone. Dreamer. Streaming through me, a rush of scent. Breathing you in and tasting the waves, the warmth and the air. Drinking the light of your eyes and your hands, I'm flowing. A wonder, you are my blood. And the last one is called For a Friend. I just want to envelop you with love today. Lay my hand upon your back and make your pain fly away like butterflies. Take your wrath and make it flow with love. Shake your head with my heart and make it light so you can see life is not dark. But I cannot take your pain or your life away and give you back what you've missed through the past. All I can do is bear with you. Let my light shine against the odds and let love herself envelop you today.
Thank you. As befits the occasion, I'm going to start off with a love poem. It's called On the Eve of Something Else Significant. On the eve of something else significant, let us not look at the prescribed event in hand. Experience crosses the mind to focus elsewhere, to what cannot be predicted by the instruments of the time. So, happily looking forward to the exams harvest, I can't but look at what happened at their end. In celebration, not so long ago now, we fancied just ourselves and kissed in unison and celebration. There and then, nature and sin, in hybrid, flowered and gave fruit, and sweetness can never be repeated. People exist apart, but surely they have souls that long not only for their home in the Creator, but in somebody else's head from time to time. But between the mini rests and my mini paradise, may the electricity between these bodies sing, to catch into view perfection for a second time. This is called some lighting words. Order is crumbling. Far, far away. Put the embryo to the candlelight and watch it tremble. Gestating from a worse sin into a new extreme. That is not yet dangerous. Crushing yet well-behaved outside his privacy. Of fruition and tears. We're on twilight's apex. I actually kissed you. Yanking wishes from troubled sleep, recurring a dream to its newfound success. That's it, thanks.
That's great, Tricia, thanks. And now we have Paul McGarrett, I think. Yeah, Garrett.
There ain't no romance in waves and wildflowers. There ain't no romance in snowfalls and trees. There ain't no romance in a barn or a stair. There ain't no romance when romance is there. There ain't no romance when baby seals cry. There ain't no romance when young swallows fly. There ain't no romance, and I'll tell you why. There ain't no romance. Romance makes me cry. There ain't no romance, just only heartache. There ain't no romance, just for romance sake. There ain't no romance, just sheer give and take. There ain't no romance, just romance archaic. There ain't no romance, it's driven me mad. There ain't no romance, no romance, it's sad. There ain't no romance, why? Oh God, why? There ain't no romance, no romance, I'll die. This comes about from conversations with long ago poets in the middle of the night, and I called it a somniatic genius. On the starting blocks, throw away comments from moor to frost and Sappho's thoughts, a cloud shroud heals, no new name for the moon. night and day pound on the brain, going backwards like Jerry Murphy. I have failed again to live with Dante, burning midnight oil to create works of art in cold silence. Daylight stock adjudication unveils muted whispers of, what the fuck is this?
Alright, and now we have Patrick McGlinchey and Last Doors at the Bar. So.
One poem. It's called Do Not Lie to a Lover. Do not lie to a lover, but on the other hand, do not always tell him the whole truth. Sometimes your secrets will feel like fire beneath your skin, silently burning, but they should be revealed only when required, like a cat's eye necklace on a dark road. Disclosure exposes, creates a stalking fear, like that of the grasshopper who sang all summer, and now faces winter without provisions. As the wind whoops and flares and sleet skitters over the whitening ground.
And now we have Ross at other things.
I'm just going to be cheeky now, so I'm going to do four pieces.
Don't
have time to get it. I'll get it. Don't worry. Alright, the first one's called Love Letters. L-O-V-E. That's the first one. Okay. L is for longing, O is for open, V is for virtuous, E is for emotional. L is for lustful, O is for obstinate, V is for vengeful, E is for explicit. L is for loyalty, O is for obedience, V is for valiant, E is for effortless. L is for lingerie, O is for O-behave. B is for voluptuous, E is for erogenous. L is for lamenting, O is for omitting. V is for variety, E is for everlasting. L is for lover, O is for offspring. V is for validation, E is for ecstatic. L is for lying, O is for offending. V is for volatile, E is for explosive. L is for lost, O is for overwhelming. V is for vacuum, E is for epitaph. Love is neither letters nor words. It's just the feeling you get when it's right. Bees nor birds, unreturned. It's your heart you must fight. The next one is half-hearted. It's called, What Can I Write of Love When It Is So Plainly Denied? What can I get from love that won't feel contrived? What can I say to love when it refuses to hear? What can I do for love if it is made in fear? What do I know of love if all I feel is pain? Will I ever truly know love, or is my quest in vain? The next one then was I got inspiration from reading Tina's book that she just launched. So there's the publicity for Tina's book. It's the quote from it was saying that if you're asking for directions and you're getting them over the phone, you'd need at least 2 A4 sheets. And it's like trying to understand Ulysses, so it depends on the person. So I wrote this poem, it's called Directions. So, to ask for directions is almost as dangerous as if to request some sound advice. Why not just call them guidelines or a destination that might suffice? So motor on the motorway and pay your toll so you do not stray. But getting lost incurs no fines. It adds an experimental vice. Do not stop locals, for they are lost themselves. And beware of the man who finishes his sentences with right. As I write this rite of passage, right. Or was that passage west, right. He left me with a straightforward route in a roundabout way. While he tries his best not to laugh and jest at the comprehensible face you display. Attuned to the duality of carriages, yields for slow children, bypass ghost islands, shock-absorbed rumble strips, white knuckles to windshield pain, to psychically deflect loose chippings, detour, deforce, decide, decline, depression. But do not bank in your tank. She might burst if the corner is so inclined. Beware of dodgy or dehiscent diesel dipstick. Green or blue? Green or blue? Primary or motorway? Should the agricultural stuff do? What, the one? What one, though? I haven't a clue. So you still think you know where you are headed? At least you'll save the ozone opting for unleaded. At what cost for this prolific premium petrol price? Have I gone too far? Is this the end? But it is far from the beaten track. Eureka, cul-de-sac.
Okay, now we have Finbar Finnegan.
Sometimes I know you're thinking of me, I hope, and they call me the cross-eyed dope, robbing and popping pills, talking tough and degrading my bitch, feeling good the night before the guilt comes and I say no more again. This is just me. Well, folks, here I am, trying to find myself. Past is gone and buried, an old pal I had to let go. The horizon is far, only if I look and stir. I will stroll and breathe, enjoy the now at ease. Who do I meet on the journey of life? This one, myself, little me. Thanks.
Thanks
for asking, Bert, and now we have Michael Ray. Water music. Over the black stain of a piano, she stands and plays. Wavering fingers stir the slow notes. Quivering stamens lure the bee. Pollinate this morning sonata. Drawn naked from the lake, he slips into the room, mesmerized by the metronome of her hips. Hands, shadow, untamed arpeggios, rippling the curve of her back. The rhythm lifts, timing the rising of the sun. Bare feet arch in the thickened room. Her shoulders shudder. Carton, shimmering a lack of lid. Skin softens as eyes follow dew-crushed footprints to the water's edge. He leaves a silent shroud, folding into the water a little depth of his lips.
Last but definitely not least,
Ash Carter. Okay, just 12 short poems. Actually, just one short poem of 12 lines. I wrote this 14 years ago when I was actually nubile and had more hair. So the women might like to close their eyes and listen to the voice to preserve the effect of the poem. It's called In Good Taste. Swived is an Elizabethan word. Apparently, a man can swive a woman, but a woman can't swive a man. So the my opening line is dramatically incorrect. How we swived like wild rowans, rushing with the river's wrath. Afterwards we rested whacked out bones, our limbs a fleshy, rosy wreath. I lay awake all night to hear you breathe, your heart the light metronome of a waif. Enervation made my brain sap seize, till sleep stole me off like a jealous wife. As my mind slipped through the dreaming seal, my tongue still savored labial cream. Was this my first dream coming real, or our first real coming in a dream?
Well, that was very lively. yes, I see Alan, and I also see another gentleman sitting to the right, standing to the right of Alan, who gave me a nod there and would like to join the open mic. So, what's your name?
Yep. Hi, Joe Milan.
Ted, Joe Milan, and then we'll have Alan Titley.
Similar to the past there, just kind of going back to an encounter when I was about 12, I'd say one of my first encounters with us. God, didn't that 12, 14 years ago? Sorry, that's right. Anyway, cycling gaily on Scarhard Road was Caroline, before whisker or other such protuberance did shadow cast on innocence. You were etherical, a breath of air, a butterfly brief, lapping up first glimpse of heavy freedom. One school holiday too short around Easter, I suspect, a boy from Ardman Estate, expecting naught but smiles, happy days. Is it okay to stream? Too short?
Yeah.
I haven't done this before. This circle, by time and geography closed, that others may now not enter, is elegantly also open in contradiction by circles many, of which we each are part, and so conjoined and concentric are our hearts linked by far-reaching strands that possibly globe also in circles to distant lands of rising sun and also setting. It recognizes neither border nor distance, though distance may sometimes cause heart to ache. Consolation may appear when we least expect. By friendly hand and gesture, a kindness, even sometimes merely observed, this infinite and limitless energy we call love. This one is called Selenellian Solstice. This shimmering valley, all aglow with light on snow, pink and pearl, fluorescent fields, lit by rising sun and setting moon, goddess gives a glimpse, the lining of her petticoat shows, satin, rarely seen, celestial, spectacular, Selenellian. In the silence of an unstilled universe, morning star is watchful eye of what portends such a sky, merely mortal, asks I. Thanks.
Find us again on a Monday night, and here we have Alan Tilly.
I was told by Paul that you were supposed to read poems, love poems, by not your own, isn't that it?
No,
maybe I misunderstood. So what I have is a poem by Robbie Burns. It's a love poem, it's actually a song, which if you bear with me, I'll sing it. But it's actually not Robbie Burns at all, because Robbie Burns did what Yeats did. He kind of stole the songs and he changed them around. And a lovely song called John Anderson by Joe, which is about an old married couple. And it comes from an earlier Scottish song. This is kind of an academic bit, really. And the original is a lot more bawdy than doing the Robbie Burns, and he cleaned it up, which is most unusual. So to lower the tone, I'm going to sing the original. So It's in Scots and a bit of it is in Gaelic, so you're not going to understand the worst part of it.
John Anderson, my Joe John, I wonder what you mean to lie so long in the morning and stay so long at ease. You'll bleed all your ears, John, and why do you so? Come sooner to your bed at ease, John Anderson, my Joe. John Anderson, my Joe, John, when you first began, you had a good tale, as only as a man. But now it waxes and wanes, John, and wrinkles to and fro, and that requires my helping hand. John Anderson, my Joe. Ich kann nicht zu mir frei ein, nur für mich aus Ort. Doch legen wir uns keinen, an einer Nogi Sorg. Ach, in die Tschaskau, ich kann nicht ein, ist ein Hamburgen Havan. Morgen noch werde ich ja und mag nach, hier nein, grüß du mir frei. When we were young, we laid out on the dike, and know it was a good thing to see your hardy dike, to see your hardy spike, John, and rise the rising blow. Oh, 'twas then I loved your chanter pipe, John Anderson, my Joe. John Anderson, my Joe, John, you're welcome when you please. If whether in the warm bed or out among the clays, look you in a bean, John, and trust me below. I have two gay ups for you, gay doon. John Anderson, my Joe. The town reached to my crying, the colour description to us. It's a whole air a hammergun, and of a knocky noir. Ach, in the top of St. Camion, it's charging live or live. It's cuddly ching retailion, the town reached to my crying. I'm backed like the salmon, I'm breasted like the swan. My weem is like the down cod, me waist you well may span. My skin from tail to top, John, is like the newborn snow. And it's all for your conveniency, John Anderson, my Joe.